This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is the Daily Digest on the Bigger Picture. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, together with Lim Soo Ann and Sumitra Selvaraj. As always, we have two stories for you today.
Our first is about the monsoon season that is not yet over, and now the number of flood evacuees in Malaysia has risen to above 10,000 people across the country. But is enough support being given to these evacuees, especially when it comes to their mental health? So the monsoon season is not yet over for Malaysia. The floods have abated in the northern states, particularly in Kelantan and Terengganu, we've seen that. But the rain has moved south, and floods in the southern states are expected to worsen in some areas. And all flood evacuees in Kelantan and Terengganu have returned home. Temporary evacuation shelters there have been closed. But latest updates from the Social Welfare Department yesterday evening has shown that the number of flood evacuees across the country has risen to just above 10,000 people.
So most of the evacuees are from Johor. And I think this morning I heard on the news that the number in Johor has risen to just over 9,000 people, but other states like Pahang and Sabah are also significantly affected, right? The northeast monsoon rains have caused floods in 9 out of 10 districts in Johor, as well as 2 districts in Pahang. The Malaysian Met Department has also issued an orange category weather warning alert on heavy rainfall for several districts in Johor, Pahang and Terengganu until today, and in Sabah until tomorrow, I think.
So, and it's not just the rain. Strong winds of between 40 to 50 kilometres per hour with waves that are reaching 3.5 metres high are also being forecast over the coastal areas of Kelantan, Terengganu, Pahang and East Johor. And this can cause seawater to overflow into estuaries, into coastal areas, further worsening the risk of flooding.
So we know that floods increase the risk of developing or worsening health conditions. I think we did a previous Daily Digest on this about the risk of waterborne and vector-borne diseases, and floods often also result in the mixing of sewage water with flood water, which can result in individuals developing problems such as diarrhea, especially if there is no provisions for sanitation and hand hygiene. And we also know that diarrhea is one of the leading causes of death in children worldwide. So if we talk about vector-borne diseases, dengue is a main concern due to the presence of stagnant pools of water.
And we talk a lot about all these health, physical health issues, but what is I perceive as less spoken about is how natural disasters such as floods can actually take a toll on the emotional and mental well-being of the affected communities.
Yeah, so the aftermath of any disaster, right? And in this case, floods will bring major life changes and uncertainty about future life. And this makes everyday realities very stressful. Those who are more vulnerable include the elderly, children, people who are ill, people who are wounded, those with disabilities. You know, these are basically people who might find it more difficult to cope with life after a disaster, and also suffer from high levels of stress.
I think particularly in cases of floods, right, it also results in feelings of grief and loss and anger, sometimes even guilt, right? Because when you think about the dealing with the loss of livelihoods, the loss of your home and your possessions, or even in some instances, the loss of a loved one, you're really talking about displacement.
And then you couple that with the breakdown of your life routine, you know, things like going to school, going to work, and this could lead to further social and lifestyle stress. So how do people on the ground, you know, especially doctors, help to identify these issues?
So on a, on a previous Live and Learn interview, we did speak to Dr. Hariati Abdul Majid. She's a psychologist and also an EXCO member of Mercy Malaysia. She works with the provision of mental health and psychosocial support to communities where they who they work with, especially those affected by natural disasters. And she came to speak after they worked with communities in the Philippines after Typhoon Haiyan. That was in 2013. But they asked, it is still something that is relevant to all communities that are affected by natural disasters. So here's a clip from the interview. where she explains how Mercy Malaysia generally approaches and assesses affected communities after a disaster.
The most important thing, it has to be done by a qualified mental health professional. You know, just because the person is crying does not mean that the person is not able to cope well. Maybe he or she is, you know, needs finally finds a place safe enough for him or her to vent his or her emotions. So very important that a qualified person does that. We have standardized psychological assessments that are used, but used appropriately. I mean, like during the emergency phase, we don't go around with a questionnaire in front of us and say, all right, can you tell us to what extent have you done this and have you done that? So what we do usually is to conduct interviews, open-ended interviews, to identify patterns, behavioral changes, sleeping patterns, appetites, ability to regulate emotions, nightmares, or whatever it is, behavioral symptoms, psychological symptoms associated with more severe psychological conditions, psychological or mental health conditions. So what we do first is to build rapport, trust, with affected communities. We do what we call focus group discussions to find out, to get an impression of the extent to which it has affected them psychologically. And then we train doctors to identify symptoms that may be related to the disaster. And we train doctors to actually refer these patients to us.
So Dr. Hariyati also explained how mental health issues can worsen in some cases if they're not identified early.
If not treated at the initial level, if not identified at the initial level, they can develop into something as severe as post-traumatic stress disorder, which is something that we hope to minimize in any disaster areas that we provide services to. So we do not want people, to actually begin to have suicidal ideation, suicide attempts. That will be the worst case scenario.
Right.
So if we can provide basic counseling services to them, or more intensive cognitive behavior therapy for them, critical incident stress management. It depends, and sometimes we do work very closely with the doctors. If there are medications needed to be prescribed to the patients, clients, we do that.
So when it comes to communities affected by natural disasters, whether we're talking about an earthquake, a typhoon, or even floods, there's often a tendency to label affected individuals as traumatized. But Dr. Hariyati emphasizes that this is a misconception to generalize all individuals affected by a natural disaster.
I think the most significant misconception would to actually label everyone affected by disasters to be traumatized by the event.
Okay.
Yeah. The word trauma is usually thrown in left, right, center, saying that they're traumatized by this, they're traumatized by that. In clinical psychological perspective, post-traumatic stress disorder is a very specific word.
Very loosely used.
It's loosely used by the public.
Yes.
But it's actually a very important and severe mental health disorder that will only be used once you're diagnosed using the right tools.
And it takes a while before you're diagnosed with it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And usually the reactions that affected communities show are normal reactions to an abnormal situation. If something bad has just happened to you, of course you will be numb. Of course you'll be shocked. Of course you will cry. Of course you will be anxious. You can't just say, oh, all right, I expected that to happen. I'm okay with it. And if they do not react the way they do, then we'd be very, very concerned.
Yep.
Yeah, because that's not a normal reaction. So I think that is the most important thing, the fact that people usually label everyone to be traumatized. So if everyone is traumatized, they are deemed not able to mobilize their own coping resources to help themselves. It's very important that we enable them, we empower them with skills, knowledge to be on their own, to bounce back from this tragedy.
So if you want to find out more from that podcast about the provision of psychosocial support for disaster survivors, you can look that up. You can search psychosocial support on the BFM website. So I thought this was quite an interesting topic to cover because it is something that I mentioned this earlier, I don't hear about very often. Mm. You hear of when there's floods happening, you hear of people sending aid to them, sending food, clothes, blankets, things like that. But I think what often you don't read about in the news reports is the provision of counsellors, of psychologists to people who are affected by floods. If I'm not mistaken, local authorities, the JKM does provide counsellors, but they're not. It's not spoken about as much.
Mm. Yeah, it's not spoken about as much because I think this whole idea of losing your home is not something the general public would think about unless you're in that situation, and without being flippant about it, right? The more privileged people, they go away on holiday, for example, or they're away for their homes for a little while, and then at the end of their trip, they're coming back home, and they say, oh, I can't wait to get home. I've really missed my home, and I can't wait to be back in my own bed. You transpose that feeling of wanting to go home to somebody who has been affected so badly that they cannot go home.
And I think the trauma of what is the place of your comfort and where you live. A good friend of mine, I remember when we were in high school, there was a fire in the house that she mm-hmm. lived in. And I remember that the thing I noticed after was not, of course, there was a massive amount. Everyone was fine, thankfully. Mm-hmm. They lost a lot of their personal possessions. And I remember that above and beyond the actual physical work of regrouping from something like that, the mental work of adjusting to that was extensive. Even back then, I realized that, you know, they seemed so lost. They seemed like they didn't know how to, they couldn't sort of process how to get used to this situation, that now the home that they used to live in was no longer there.
Yeah, it's an unexpected change in your life routines, isn't it? Like you mentioned earlier, Sharmila, it's something so familiar to you, and then overnight everything changes. And I think it's difficult for most of us to imagine what that's like. But for many parts of Malaysia, a lot of these communities, they face these floods year after year. It's the same issue again and again, and they have to move to shelters every year, and they face that displacement annually, and I can't imagine how difficult it must be for them.
It's also the idea of material possessions, right? You know, whether these possessions are expensive or inexpensive is really immaterial here. But the fact of the matter is, we all have material possessions in our lives that we need and want. The fear of losing important documents, of losing family keepsakes or heirlooms. It could be something as simple as a spoon from your grandmother's kitchen, you know, that you've held on to. The idea of losing a part of your legacy and history, of it being wiped away by floodwaters, is, to me, devastating.
And what Suan just mentioned, right, I was thinking, the idea also that this becomes a yearly occurrence.
Yes. Mm.
So you never kind of settle into a security.
Perhaps.
That, yes, it might have happened once, but then to have to contend with the fear that it's going to happen again and again.
You know, I always think about that when I hear about people who, like, for example, live in the tornado belt, for example, in the US. I always wonder to myself, why would you live there knowing that once a year or twice a year it's going to come sweeping past you?
I suppose for a lot of people, there's not a choice, right?
And absolutely right. And it's probably what, in a way, what they're used to as well. It's their home for those who grew up there, who went to school there, who started families there. It is their home. It's difficult, perhaps, to imagine a life somewhere else.
I remember reading a report, I think it was in The Lancet a couple of years ago, about how when Hurricane Katrina hit, and, you know, they did a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder counselling work with a lot of the survivors. I think the study that they did post-Katrina found that something like 12 months, 24 months later, a significant proportion of the survivors still were struggling with depression and anxiety.
Well, if you have thoughts on mental health, especially when it comes to after a disaster situation, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can call us at 03-7733-2900. That's it from us on this story. We will be back after a short break. But first, here's Take Me Home Country Roads by John Denver.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.